A few months ago, I had the good fortune to be in Fort Worth, Texas, and I was invited to the Harbor Club there by my old friend C.A. It was a newcomers meeting. We walked on in and found us a seat, and we were sitting there, and I heard somebody say, "Big Jim's here," and all of a sudden there was a hush over the whole crowd, and you could kind of see a little glow come on in the room, and you knew that if Big Jim was here, everything was all right and ready to go. I expect in about an hour, maybe a little less, we'll know why. So if you will, please help me welcome Jim W. from Fort Worth, Texas.
I don't know what that means. You? Thank you, John, for picking me up at the airport. I always feel funny when you walk off the airport and they don't know who you are and you don't know who they are, and they see you, they may not like you, they just walk off, you know. And the committee for having me, I'll thank you now in case you're not here at the end of the meeting. But I am Jim Williams, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm not supposed to be an alcoholic. I'm supposed to be a Southern Baptist. Not just a Southern Baptist, I'm supposed to be a Southern Baptist. And they're different, you know. They've got the inside track, they're going to get there first, and the Catholics got a shot if they ever quit drinking. Well, they raised me on that bench. And they have guys up there, you know, just like me, pointing a finger at you and say, "If you think it, you might as well have done it." Well, I was thinking it, and I didn't even know what it was, but I knew I was one of those that's thinking it. I just knew that I wasn't one of them, and whoever it was that was one of those, I was one of those. And they talked about those a lot, but they never talked about them. And I always thought, that's who they're talking about, one of those, and I'm here, and the rest of those folks out there are not going to make it, and I'm one of them. And I got to be, you know, they'd sing that last stanza for that one right back there. Hell, they point at you, you know. And your throat hurts, you just hang in there and make it one more Sunday. Because whatever it is they're doing, you know if you do what they're doing, you ain't ever going to get to do anything. And I didn't even know what it was that they did. But I knew that those people that were doing it was bad, but they liked it. And I knew if I joined up with them, I never would get to do it, and I never would get to find out what it was. And I got to be about 13, which will happen to you if you do what I was doing one day at a time, which was nothing. And I got around this girl and got those funny feelings. And I told them about it. They said, "We've been meaning to talk to you." See, I knew they had. Said, "You know, we've been praying for you." See, I knew it. There's something about me I knew that was different than it was about them. And I knew whatever it was they had, I didn't have it. And whatever those other people had, I had it. But I didn't know what it was. But I guess it had something to do with funny feelings. So they said, "We want you to meet us before the funeral, the service." And I met them before the service, and they get you in that room, talk to you, and you're going to do it. You're just going to do it. I want people to like me. I want to fit in. I want people to say, "Isn't Jimmy a good boy?" I just love it. Hell, I just loved it. When I even knew what it was, I just loved good feelings. I don't know why I did. I don't know why. I never liked to get sick because I always had bad feelings. I just loved good feelings. I don't know where I learned that. I just picked it up somewhere, I guess. So I said, "Okay." They sang that last stanza for that and right back there. Hell, they know which one it is. You know, it's not like AA. The AA says, "Well, saw old John lay in the ditch last night. If he lives, we'll get him." And they hone in on one, you know, and they just pick them out, start praying for them, and get those bad ones in there. So I came down the aisle, and it's kind of like AA, except don't give out any chips. They hug you and kiss you and tell you how great you are, and they put you in the tank and handkerchief leaks, you choke a little, but you come out okay. Went to school the next day and saw that girl, came right back. I said, said, "Well, we're going to have to do it again." Didn't take. They said, "No, you just don't do it." Well, they didn't know. I didn't know how to don't do anything. I didn't know they could just say, "Don't do that anymore," and they just didn't do it anymore. And I said, "How do you don't do it?" "Don't think about it." I said, "I wonder why I didn't think about that." I thought, "Well, I've been thinking about it all day today. I'll just go ahead and think about it the rest of the day, and in the morning I'll get up, I'll never think about it again." Got up the next morning, started thinking about it more than I ever thought about it in my life. I had no idea that I'm the kind of guy that anytime I start not to think about something, I'm going to think about it more than I ever did. Anytime I start not to do something, I'm going to do it more than I ever did before. Now, I don't know where I learned that. Hadn't been anywhere but the Baptist church and school and a small town. When the whole deal was to drive around the square on Saturdays. And that's not doing a lot of heavy stuff, you know. That's not doing your thing like they do today. Well, I kept doing that one day at a time, having brain damage. Not doing it. Because I didn't know how to get peace when you don't do it. Just stand there and don't do it. Finally got out of high school. I had a hard time getting out of high school. I don't know why. It was my activities were not what lets you pass grades. And I was just tied up doing all those things I thought people wanted me to do. And I ended up didn't get out of high school. So I had to go to summer school. 30 miles away. We have dry counties where I live. Bunch of them in Texas. Watch it. If you go back to drinking, you'll have a dry spell driving through Texas. Well, them counties are long in between them, and they're dry, and they're dry, dry, dry. And so I didn't think anybody drank except old Bratch, and he slept downtown and drank wine and bay rum, and I never did drink bay rum and always tried to get out of town before I went to sleep. So one Saturday, I heard about this town 30 miles away that was wild and wicked. And this guy and I slipped off over there, and we opened that door of that honky-tonk, and there was that deacon with a warm girl in one hand and a cold beer in the other. I said, "My God, let's get out of here. He's going to tell Jesus on us, and we didn't even get to do it." He said, "He can't tell anybody, but I knew he had a better shot with Jesus than I did." But he was happier than I'd ever seen him. And he's with a different girl. And I did think she looked a lot better than that Saturday night girl. Was a lot better than that Sunday morning one, you know. And now I know what's wrong with him. I just didn't know he had such a good personality. I thought he was just a sad man. He looked sad every Sunday morning. Now I know he's just tired. Well, we had two beers. That's the only time I remember just having two beers. It didn't taste good, didn't do anything for me, and I was glad to get out of there. And the next morning, I waked up, and the first time I wanted to go to church ever, I said, "Maybe you get old enough, you don't have to go." God, I ran down there, and there he was, sitting in the same pew with that other woman, sad like he always was. Then I had my first spiritual awakening. Maybe you can do it a little bit and just don't tell anybody. So I told my buddy, I said, "Next Saturday we're going back, don't tell a soul. His big town had two joints, we'll go to the other joint." We went to the other joint and I learned how to do everything but commit adultery. And I'd have done that except, you know how we are, we get so busy. Think about it all day long and don't get to do it that night. Because we get tied up. Then if you do, you don't know whether you did or not. You never get to find out. You can't call back and say, "We do anything last night?" Hell, you might have, and it was great. You don't ever know, you know. I learned how to drink. Didn't even know I knew how. You start drinking one right after the other, you get to feel as good, you can't feel at all. Learned how to dance, fall down the dance floor, and break my nose. After I learned how to do it, did it several times after that. Learned how to black out, wake up the next morning, throw up. That guy called and said, "How you feel?" I said, "My God, I feel horrible." He said, "Oh, but you had a great time." I said, oh, well. Then I knew how to have a good time. Go out and black out and wake up the next morning and throw up. You know you had a good time. I didn't even know you drank it any other way. I thought you drank it one way. That's just whatever it is needs to be turned loose, turn it loose. That's the only way I knew to drink it. And I thought the people that didn't do that just didn't know how to drink it. They just didn't drink. I thought people that just drank one or two didn't drink. I thought drinking was the only way you just get it in the right position and let her go. Doesn't sound too bad right now. Just let everything go. You know, economy, debts, never just let her. And it goes. That's what was so great about it. Hell, it worked. That's fantastic. Have a big lunch like a cheese cracker and go. Don't have to worry about indigestion. Hell, you're going to throw up after a while anyway. Got a lot of advantages, you know. It wasn't all a bad life. You know, for health purposes, especially mental health, I had brain damage when I was sober. Reality sets in, you know, like working and things not working out and underfinanced. I had all those problems when I was sober, and when I was drunk, I was just fine. And blacked out, I was perfect. I drove perfect when I was blacked out. I know, because I always got to wherever it was I was going. Sometimes it wasn't where I'd planned, but I always got there. It's just like today. I never know where I'm going, and sure enough, I get there. And I used to do the same thing drinking. You got to lose control either way if you make it. Either life you live in, you got to lose control. Damn, it's the silliest thing I ever got into in my life. This thing is worse than what I was in before. You've got to know where you're going, but make sure you don't plan it. Now, make sure you're not sure that you want to go there, because this deal is altogether different. It's none of your business where you're going. And to be sober doing that's ridiculous. But they say you got to, so hell, there you are. Well, I kept doing that. I knew you couldn't do it a lot, because you get caught, so I just did a lot when I did it. And then they had a war, and I went. I was already screwed up. Hell, I screwed up before I took a drink. They'd always say, Jimmy would never want to do that. Yeah, I did too. Bad. Sometimes I'd already done it. They'd say, Jimmy wants to do that. No, I didn't either. I did not want to do it. Everything they thought I wanted to do, I didn't want to do it. Everything they knew that I didn't want to do, I wanted to do it. So I knew then I screwed up before I ever got up. But then when I finally... They had a war, and they got up at the ridiculous hours, and they'd go to bed. Hell, right after dark, which was ridiculous. And they'd get ready to go somewhere. They'd get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and leave at 10. Silliest thing I ever saw in my life. Hell, they went to China and stayed 2 years. I was ready to come back after the first 2 weeks. Then I came back, and everybody's going to school over. My God, I'm the last person that ought to go to school. I couldn't get out of school. Go to school. Why do you want to go to school? I don't want to go to school. So what am I going to do? Go to school. Well, I showed them. I did. I got that degree. That's what they said you had to get. But I made sure I did not get an education. You know what I like about you and I? We're the greatest in the world. There's a lot of people that would not prefer, insist upon destroying themselves just to be right. But you and I would. In a living minute. I'd rather be destroyed than be wrong. And if I could prove that I was right, I'd be willing to die for it without any shadow of a doubt. With years of misery. I never saw anybody that hated misery and loved it better than you and I did. We just love it. You know, what would you do if you got up and felt good all day? What if somebody said, how are things? Fine. How are they really? Now I can tell you. You'd have to give that up. You'd say, how are they really? They really are just fine. Wouldn't that be ridiculous to have to live that way all day long? And at night, too? And to wake up in the morning and say, God, I'm glad to be up. Whew. Well, I don't do that. And I don't do it, and I don't get into that. It'd be ridiculous. You'd fall flat on your face, jumped out of bed and said, God, I'm Lord, thank you for being awake today. When you know it's going to be a terrible day. I had positive thinking years ago. Hell, I knew it wasn't going to work. And you know what? I was right. It did not work. Nothing I did worked. And I want to tell you something, I gave it everything I had. Full time. Everything I had. And the way I had to do it, to survive, to drink, to do it, it's a hard way to do it. But I went to any length to make it work. And it didn't work. Well, I was trying to get married. I had some minor difficulties with women. I don't know where I learned it. Hadn't been anywhere but church school. But if you put 10 pretty girls up there, I'll get the sick one every time. One girl did not go with me the third time, and the rest of the time, I did not fail. I love it in AA when they come in now. Oh, I used to love it right at first. They wouldn't let me do it, but I just love it. When you go out for ice cream, and this girl hadn't been there for a couple of 3 weeks, and she'd reach over and whisper and say, you know, I just really can't talk to another woman. And I said, I understand, baby. I'll help you. Get a guy and say, how come you don't want to go with her? Oh, I want to go with her. Why do you want to go with her? The chemistry mixes. That's it. If you'll hang in with that one and don't drink, you can learn how to get sicker than rain in about a month. Sober. God, and I know about that. That's the darndest thing I ever saw in my life. Well, I was trying to get married because I knew you had to be married and you had to be in love. You couldn't go with anybody unless you're in love. The only thing that happened to me is I got to where I was in love, and sometimes it's awkward when you don't have a girl. So I used to know when my love affairs were like when I finally found them. You know, I was not one of those boys that could just go with any girl. I had to have one that you could always take home and always be in love with. And it takes a while to find sick women. You know, they're not grouped anywhere except AA and Al-Anon, and I didn't get to get there. I couldn't find it. You know, hell, when you get here, why, it's the greatest thing I ever saw in my life. My God, they got them grouped. Then they won't let you do it. If you've got the wrong sponsor like I did, if you get the right sponsor, hell, you can just stay sick. Which is ridiculous to get well when you know how to be sick so well. Well, my love affairs would be, I'd be so much in love within 2 months, I could hardly work. I'd almost just have to quit my job because we could hardly be separated from one another. And then it would just deteriorate from there on out. And I did that 1 year at a time. Finally found me one. But before that, I committed suicide. I got to where I was having trouble where I worked. Every place I worked and the people I worked for were never very smart. Even because they owned the business, they wanted to run it their way. And they were doing it wrong. And I always tried to explain to them where I was supposed to be, how much they were supposed to pay me, and how I was underpaid, and the position I was supposed to have, and what they were doing wrong. And being a conscientious type of person, I had to explain to them what they needed to do and insist upon it, doing it the right way. And I didn't notice for a long time I was always the one that was leaving. Some of the businesses where I worked are still operating doing it wrong. Finally got out of a job and couldn't get one. And the way I looked for a job, I'd get up and throw up and spray. Then I'd go fill out one application, which is enough for a full day's work, because you've got a bunch of blanks on it, and you've got to figure out where you've been the last 10 years, where you work, and then who are you going to write all those people for them to call, and you've got to figure out what they want you to say and make up everything that you think they're going to want to hear, and then don't get the job. And you know, we need to not get the job. If we get the job, hell, we'll have to go to work. And that ruins our disposition, you know, bad. Because it's in the daytime when we're tied up. So I kept doing that for about 10 days, and I went to this one place that I knew the people that were there. And I knew they knew me, and I knew they'd hire me. And I knew they had an opening. And when I got there, this guy said, "You don't want this job." "Yes, I do. I want the job. I need it. I've got to have a job. I've been out of job for 3 weeks." He said, "You do not want this job." They knew me well enough that I knew there was something they wanted to tell me, but they didn't know how to do it. And I knew they did. I knew they wanted to tell me something, but they didn't know what to tell me. But I also knew they were going to be a lot more comfortable when I left. You could feel it. So I went out and did what I was supposed to, left them, went out and got drunk, waked up the next morning and said, "You know, I've been doing this for almost 2 weeks. I think I'll just take the day off." So I went out to the golf course, needed an old egg, an old piece of toast. I know his old went down old. Went around to the beer joint right next to the golf course where my only friend left was. And he said, "God, you look terrible this morning." I said, "I think I'm coming down with something." He said, "The way you look, I think you need a beer bad." I said, "Oh my God, it's only 9:15. I never drink before noon, which is 10:30 for Baptist." And he said, "Well, the way you look, I don't think it makes any difference." So I drank half that beer and sprayed the golf course with it. I don't mind spraying if I don't lose my concentration. You know, when you get to thinking about women or something, and it gets in your nose, just burns, and you got to drink the rest of the day to kill the pain. And I knew how to meditate before I got here. I do not meditate that close anymore. It's just when it's just you and the commode, and God, and you say, "Oh, God." And then it's stringy, and you don't know where the end is, and you sure can't breathe, because you get it all back. But I don't get that close anymore. Or you just know you're either staying or going. They ought to use that stuff they make those commodes out of for this energy deal. Even in the hot summertime with no air conditioning. After you get through that deep meditation, you know, you're kind of worn out and tired. It's exhausting, you know. And you just lay over there and it's just as cool. I told this guy, I said, "I think I better go home and lie down." I didn't get to use those vibrators in motels until 2 years after I was sober, because I could just go home, lie down, vibrate, didn't have any trouble at all. And I went home and I had a meeting. I love to have a meeting with me. I just love it, because I can solve things without any shadow of any doubt. And what I like about it is, when I get them solved, I know it's the way I know it is. I called on hospitals. I used to hate to go to these hospitals. Some of them, one of them was an old big hospital there. And you can't ever find a parking place. When you do, you got to carry that old kit down through the basement, walk down a bunch of places, and that purchasing agent's no good, won't buy anything anyway. It's amazing. You don't even have to stop. Just drive right on by. Because you settled it all. Go to the beer joint and say, "That old guy didn't buy nothing again this week." So I got home, and I got in the living room, and I decided to have a meeting. So I called all the me's together. And we decided we'd commit suicide, and those guys that didn't hire me would worry about it for the rest of their days. They'd never be able to get over it. They'd see the headlines of the Houston Chronicle. Jimmy Williams commits suicide. But I didn't know how to do it. You know, now everything's modernized. You see on television, suicide, call that number. Isn't that fantastic? Hell, there's nothing cold turkey anymore. One of their newer methods is take a bunch of pills. Hell, the only thing they remember is the pump. And I have all three of my suicides are cold turkey, old-fashioned suicide. I remember every bit of it. I was in sound mind and body. I didn't have a gun. And besides their noise, and I don't like noise of the morning, and they splatter all over everything. I don't like messy things. Razor blades were popular then, but I didn't know how to do it. And they didn't have that number to call. They don't teach it in church or school. They ought to teach it in one or the other. Half of us are going to need it, you know. I knew you couldn't do it in the living room. You get blood all over the carpet. Now I'm always thinking of others. So I went to the bathroom and got my razor blade, sat down on the throne, cut both wrists just a little bit. I had sense enough to know that if you just cut one, your left side would die and your right side would be alive. And I don't like awkward situations, you know. So I tried to cut both wrists evenly so they'd bleed properly. And I'm just sitting there listening to the drip and thinking about those guys who'll never get over it. And the phone rang. God, I had to have another meeting. What if where I'm going, I'll always wonder who that was called? That'd be enough to run you crazy. So I answered the phone, put a Band-Aid on my wrist right quick. Well, I didn't cut him. One night we was at the club, and some gal called and said, my husband's committed suicide, and he's in the bathroom. We ran over, and he cut a big old gash down there, and he didn't die either. So my scar's almost gone, and I died just as good as he did. Picked up the phone, it was the police. And you know, police have a bad personality change. I've never talked to one of them yet, didn't. They'd stop you and say, come go along with me. Kind of like ministers, you know. And I said, no, I can't go. I'm on my way home. And then they start getting all upset. And I said, well, I'm sorry, by God, but I can't go. I've got to go home. I'm late already. Then they just go crazy, and you have to pacify them, go along with them, you know. Well, this guy called and says, where were you last night? I said, I was right here. He said, no, you wasn't. I said, how do you know? He said, we is there. Then I didn't want to talk to him anymore. I'd already learned, don't ever talk to anybody who knows more about where you've been than you do. I said, what do you want me to do? And he said, well, you can either come down here or we'll come out there and get you. I said, I'll be right there. Then I hung up the meeting. I love to live with me. I said, my God, it's only 11 o'clock and I've had two big meetings, committed suicide, been to the golf course, threw up, and now I've got to have another emergency meeting. I love to live with me because I can live an entire week in a half a day. I thought, well, I don't like either one of those options. I've got $36, which before inflation was plenty to start a new career. I said, I think I'll just leave Houston and forget the whole thing. So I just put all my clothes in the car and mailed the key to the people that owned the place and left. And I ended up the next morning in a little town in West Texas, and it's $7:07 a.m. And I said, I wonder how my folks are getting along. It's amazing how you can think of them and need to see them badly, especially if you're under finance. So I called them, and I was about 150 miles from where they live, and they said, come by. I never shortchanged my folks. I always gave them my very best story so they would not get their money's worth, because they never were going to get their money back, you know. I love to tell my story because it's horrible. You know, we never had a bad story. It's just horrible. Then you get to listen to it. Hell, I cry with them when you realize how bad it really is. And an old John would say, well, Jimmy's honest. Let him have 100. God, with 107, you can almost go into business. So I ended up down on the border of Mexico. I had a new meeting, decided to go, instead of going to West Texas, I'll go to South Texas, never been there. Knew a guy that went down there, don't know whether he's there or not, but don't call, they'll tell you not to come. And I ended up getting a job down there. Then I was trying to go with two women. You know, in case one of them falls out, you got to kind of have two. Or one and a half, kind of. And it's hard to court when you call about 4 o'clock and said, how about seeing you about 7:30? Okay, fine. And it may be 3 or 4 days before you get by there. So it's really hard to get it accomplished. But this girl was a little bit different. You know, the others, we just kind of have verbal stuff. But she'd take advantage of me when my equilibrium was off. One night, I'd been drinking some. And being an honest person, like I am, I was over at her house and I expressed evidently about 11 o'clock that I decided to go see that other girl. And I didn't want to deceive anybody, you know. And I said, but I need to go to the bathroom first, and she followed me in there. And that's a bad place to have a meeting. There's not any soft surfaces in there. I don't know exactly what the meeting was all about, except the next morning I'm living in a beautiful place, an old faded green trailer behind a motel. And fortunately, the rock alley is my front yard, which is good because the weeds don't grow much, and I don't have time for yard work anyway because I'm busy. And I'm just sleeping like you're supposed to be, and wham! on that door. My God, I come out of there like a shot. I'd already learned how to wake up in total fright in my own bed. And I looked down there and I still had my clothes on. I said, oh, my God, I bet I was going somewhere early. Opened the door and there stood that 6'4", 240-pound Baptist preacher. He said, come go along with me. I said, preacher, I can't make it. I cannot make it. There's no way I can go anywhere right now. My God, I got to clean up. And I'll tell you, preacher, I'm bad shape. I got bad drunk last night. He said, yes, I know. He got me in that car and total fright set in with no light. And I don't do well with total fright. There's no light. And I said, preacher, I've got to have a beer. I have got. You know me. I just got to have a beer. I'm not going to make it. He said, there'll be no drinking till after the meeting. Well, we drove up in front of her house, and I felt like she was involved. I looked down there and had a little blood on my shirt. I didn't know whose it was. Felt like it's mine because my head was throbbing and pounding like I'd been in a car wreck, and I knew my car was there, but I didn't check to see where it was wrecked or not. And went in there, and she looked like she might have fallen in a bush or something. She didn't look top shape. And then I went in the bathroom and looked in that mirror, and I'll guarantee you one thing, she won. We decided that it was time for me to settle down. I agreed. I was trying to settle down. It wouldn't let me have a beer. How are you going to settle down without a beer? You can't do it. So we got married 2 weeks later. I had all the qualifications. I was a drunk, and I was single, which is all you need to get married. We got married at the First Baptist Church at 10 a.m. on Saturday morning with no drinking before the funeral ceremony. And that way it'll work. We weren't going to invite anybody. About 11 o'clock, I started drinking enough and called people till 3. My best friend, the beer distributor, said, we did not come to see y'all get married. We came because we did not believe it. Y'all's friends don't even like each other. The longest bet on your marriage is 3 weeks, but we showed them. We hung in there for 8 years, but my life changed. I had no idea how nice it was to get up in the morning and throw up in peace. I was always going to quit smoking because it made me gag in the morning. I'd grab that coffee and those cigarettes and run to that bathroom and lock that door, and I'd be throwing up and shaving and getting ready, and she's telling me what I am through that door. I've got to get upset, be mad all day long, work and make the living, go out and get drunk, come home, tell her what she was, and we did that one day at a time. We worked up such a deep hate for one another that we were safe because the one that died first won. I lost that job. Couldn't get one. 2 months. Finally, a guy that managed a drug company that was a drunk like me hired me. Took him about 2 months to get rid of me. He sent me out to a little town in West Texas where 536 people lived there, and 36 of them were making a living. And I joined the 500. And it's 60 or 70 miles between towns. And I had to stand in a drugstore and write those orders out. I didn't know how to spell it, let alone write it. And you can't do that, vibrate. And this pharmacist says, you're going to fly apart. I said, any minute. And he said, take some of these. This was for Valium. I understand Valium, you cross both eyes and walk straight. This was just Librium, which is nothing. And he gave me tens, which are practically aspirin. So I took a couple and nothing happened. Hell, I waited 15 or 20 seconds. Took 3 more and your knees just go. I said, hell, I knew how to weave. Now I got to learn new stance. So I took Librium daytime, drank beer at night. Had one decision to make every night. After my third beer, I decided whether I was going to go home early or close the joint. If I was going to close the joint, stayed on beer. And if I was going to go home early, I'd just go get me a half pint of whiskey and kill it with a couple of beers. I go home one way and one way only, blacked out. My ideal night, my perfect night, is to get in the car drunk It's where you can have some fun on the way home. You know, my stripe always went to the right. Always wanted to ask somebody, does your stripe always go to the right? I never would remember it the next day. And then you'll be going along there and your eyes watering and you know the stripes back and everything looks good and you just got two tail lights up there. It says, I think I'll have a little more light. Just turned on, you got 8. So it gives you something to do on the way home. Then black out right at the door. Now that was my perfect night. Now I didn't always do that, but I tried for it. I did that for about 6 months. Lived just like that. I'm going to tell you one little thing that may save your life someday in case you have to go back to drinking. It was 60, 70 miles between towns. No water. They got little trees out there about that high, and you can see California on a clear day. And I remembered I'd be okay. And I'd leave town to get out about 10 or 15 miles, and that total fright would set in. And then I remembered one time a guy said, if your mouth ever gets real dry, bite the tip of your tongue and the saliva will come. Believe me, that works. It's hard on your tongue, but it works. And you can take those capsules. And that's what I had to do. That's no charge for that. Sis. Somebody recommended me for a job back in Houston. And I don't know why I got the job. They flew me to Indiana. I did not know what they did, and I couldn't tell them I didn't know. Because they were 42 years old, and I thought, well, everybody ought to know what they're doing. And they didn't know why I was there, and I couldn't tell them because I didn't know either. And the guy that had recommended me hadn't seen me in 15 years, and they said, there's got to be some good reason he recommended you. And I knew there was, but I couldn't think of it either. See, I didn't know. I couldn't help them. Finally, they said, we don't know what to do with you. I said, well, I'll tell you one thing. I can do it. This guy said, well, if you think you can do it, we're just going to go ahead and hire you. I said, good, because it's 3 o'clock. My God, that's a long time past 10:30. Got on an airplane and moved back to Houston. My customers, my new customers, never saw me drunk. I'd have a beer or two with them, or a drink or two, leave them, and go to my place, get drunk, black out, and go home. And I always had one or two places, in case one place got to where they didn't need my business anymore, and I'd take it somewhere else. Some of them got full, then couldn't handle too many. And I did that. And then on the day before Christmas Eve, of 1965. I played golf with these customers and we got to drinking a little too much and I got caught and they took me by their house and I blacked out right at the house and didn't do anything any different than I've done 1,000 times. Drove from one side of Houston to the other, blacked out, waked up the next morning in total fright because I'm in my own bed, don't know how I got there. Look out there and my car's back. I don't know who brought it back. Parked funny, so I guess I did. Go around it, no new dents, no new blood. So then I just settle into fright and wait till 10:30. And that morning, I walked back in the house, apartment, and old what's-her-name went next door that's going to have a party, and I am not an alcoholic because I don't drink wine and bay rum and sleep down behind the grocery store. And that's the only alcoholic I never knew and the only one I ever wanted to know. Never looked for any more. And I went in, I guess I heard it on the radio. I picked up that phone book and looked under Alcoholics Anonymous and called in a group. And that girl acted like she is glad I called. I should have known then there's something wrong. She said somebody would be right out. Well, I waited an hour. Nobody showed up and it's 10:15, looked in the icebox, had 3 beers. I said, my God, I'll call them. And I couldn't remember who I called. And about that time, the phone rang. Guy said, I'll be right there. And I swore I could tell him I didn't need him. Hell, he hung up. And I said, well, just get rid of him. Looked out the window, and there was a little short, pointed nose with a book under his arm. You could tell he wasn't my kind of guy right there. I said, oh, my God. We're going to read that book and pray. I've not only been baptized, I've been rededicated 10 times. So I said, I'll just get rid of it. And he came in the door. We didn't read that book, and we didn't pray. And I don't know what he said. And about that time, old what's-her-name came back in. He said, you want to go with me? And I didn't, but it's better than staying with her. So I got in the car with him and hit that old loop in Houston. I said, God, I've made a mistake going off with a perfect stranger. He's not even my kind of guy. And I don't know him from Adam. And I always know to take my own car. And I gave him the test. I said, I'll buy a beer. I don't want a beer. I knew it. I waited about 15 seconds, and I said, well, you're going to have to let me out of here on the freeway or take me over to that utility. I got to have a beer, and I got to have it right now. Besides that, it's 11 o'clock. He said, can you wait till we get to the club? Oh, yeah, I can do that. If I've got a little light, I can handle that fright, baby. I know how to handle it just as long as that light's down at the end of the tunnel. We drove and drove over in kind of a bad neighborhood and drove up in front of an old house. And two or three of the cars around there looked pretty good, and the rest of them looked about like mine. I thought, is this it? He said, yeah. I thought, well, when I get some money, I'll help these folks. He opened the door, and a bunch of the deacons were sitting over there talking about women in the stock market, and I found out later on didn't know anything about either one. Had an old bar back there in the back, but I'll bet the linoleum was old with holes in it before they even put it in there. And the bartender didn't look a hell of a lot better than I did. And that little short thing walked up there at that bartender and said, mix him up a little milk and honey. I said, my God, what do you put in it? I never drank anything like that in my life. He said, well, you see, you're nervous. I said, hell, that's what I've been trying to tell you. And he said, you see, you're used to sugar in your system from alcohol. That's the reason you need the honey. And the honey's already been digested. I said, indigestion's not my problem. I drank half of it, and it curdled and came right back up. He said, don't worry about it. We have plenty. One of the smart ones said, walk all you want to. Hell, I didn't want to walk at all. They just let you walk up and down, and they just keep looking at you and laughing and talking. We've got a new animal in here today, and they just watch you walk up and down there. Drinking that sweet, sweet, sweet God it got.
We got there at 10:30, 11 o'clock. We did that all day long. And about 6 o'clock, he said, I think it's time we went home. And I said, you
bet it's time we went home. I said, I've got some things I've got to do. And I said, now let me out about 2 blocks away from the house. I want to sneak in there and get my car and get out of there before what's-her-name sees me. He said, don't drink anything. I'm going to pick you up in an hour. I said, what for? He said, we're going to a meeting. I said, where? Right back where we came from. I said, my God, we was there all day. Hell, there he was. I just let me out the house. Drove back over there, and it's a funny bunch. A lot of them didn't act like they was too happy. I saw a few kind of, you know, hugging and doing a little laughing. Not much. And they said some prayer. I didn't understand it. So. Then some gal got up and talked a little bit, and they just laughed. Hell, it wasn't a damn thing funny. She didn't say nothing funny, they laughed. And that guy said, the guy talked another 30 minutes, and they just laughed. Hell, it wasn't nothing funny. It wasn't a joke in the whole bunch. They just laughed like it's funny. Then they got up and they all held hands and said the Lord's Prayer. And my God, I never saw the Holy Spirit moving there like that in my life. They all got talking at the same time. I thought, well, what in the hell did they do? Didn't sing any songs, come down and get on the knees or nothing. It just happened and that place exploded. Then I kept standing around there and watched them, and then I saw the deal. I'm with the only guy that nobody likes. Bunch of them, groups of them, not inviting us. Men and women, laughing and hugging and grabbing each other's arms and running out and jumping those cars. And 3 or 4 of them cars are taking off, following each other. I said, my God, I've got the only deacon in the whole bunch that nobody likes. I kept watching them, and they kept doing it. And we kept not going and not going. And I knew what they're doing. Hell, I know what they're doing. They're having a little drink. You get in with them and you just do what you're supposed to do. God, and I could tell it. You know, I just feel it. And I already had one picked out. She was just my kind. She'd been there less than I had. And then one night, we went to a meeting every living night and twice on Saturday and Sunday.
They used to get so excited. Had an hour and a half meeting first on Saturday. And then they said, we got to hurry to get 24-hour club. You know, it's crossed out. I said, my God, why do you go to another meeting? Not worth a damn. Hell, they just kept going to meetings, and they were terrible meetings. And they kept going to them. Sometimes they just all talked, didn't say nothing. And then sometimes some idiot would get up there and talk, and hell, they just laughed. Everything's funny. Wasn't damn thing funny. One night, it's just raining, raining, raining. God, it rains in Houston. Just drops out. Might drop out over here a little bit, too. He called, and I said, it's raining. He said, did you ever go get a drink when it's raining? I said, I'll be ready. And then one night, about a month later, I just turned out all the lights, pulled down the shades, left nothing on but the TV set. Oh, what's the name's out of town? I just sat there and watched the TV, and the old phone just ring, ring. I said, let it ring. Next morning, he called and said, where were you last night? They really are nosy, you know. I said, I want to tell you one thing. I was right here, and I watched television. I enjoyed every living minute of it. I was tickled to death. I didn't have to go with those damn meetings. I just enjoyed every bit of it. Had a good time by myself. Just had a big time. And I liked it, and I liked it, and I want you to know, and you tell the whole damn group I liked it. He said, well, you missed it. I said, what did I miss? He said, I don't know. I said, wasn't you there? He said, yeah, but I only heard what I was supposed to hear. We'll never know what it was you were supposed to hear. I said, my God, you got to go every night. You'll miss it. Went 3 months, got drunk, went 3 months, got drunk, went 3 months, got drunk, and sobered up on my own all by myself. Because I got tired of sobering up and crawling back through the crack of the door. You don't even have to open it. You don't crawl through the crack. Say, Jimmy's back. And they say, everything's going to be all right. Hell, it ain't going to be all right. Hell, I've been there. Just as miserable sober as it was drinking. Just miserable every day. She wasn't any better. My job was worse, and my finances were worse, and they were terrible. So I sobered up on my own, and I was going to go back to officially resign so they'd never bother me again. And I was going to go get financed and do my thing. And at the meeting, before I could tell him, he said, don't ever call me again. I said, God, I'm glad you said that. You're not my kind of guy anyway. They called you. I didn't call you. And I never liked you from the first day I saw you. And they don't like you either, because they go somewhere every night and you're not invited, so we don't get to go. And if I had as bad a personality as you did, I'd go back to drinking. And you don't have to worry about it. I'll never call you again as long as I live. And I didn't till the next morning. And he said, meet me at the club. I walked in the club and he said, get your coffee and sit down. They talk to you like a dog, you know. He said, I'm going to tell you something about Alcoholics Anonymous, Al-Anon, Al-Ateen, Al-Atot, and Al-Adol. There's absolutely no failure here. This program does not fail, provided you do exactly what we tell you to do the way we tell you to do it. Says, now the only thing that you get to do for the rest of your days is make the decision. That's all you're ever going to get to do. You're never going to get to do anything else but make the decision. But you alone get to do that. And if you don't give an alcoholic a decision to make, he'll flounder for years. So I'm going to give you a decision to make this morning. You're either going to do exactly what I tell you to do, the way I tell you to do it, or go right back out that door. I said, I don't want to do either one. He said, I didn't ask you what you wanted to do. I asked you what you're going to do. I said, do you mean to tell me that y'all don't care whether I want to or not? He said, not at all. I said, well, I don't like it either. He said, that's perfectly all right with us. You don't need to. I said, well, I'll tell you one thing. If you'll make it perfectly clear to the group that I do not want to do it, then I'll do it. He said, well, first of all, we've got to get some things straight. It's your thinking that's wrong. I said, how much am I thinking wrong? We always start with all of it. And if there's any good, we'll let you know. I said, you put a sign up there that says, think, think, think. And he said, that's for us. So now we're going to give you some things not to do and some things to do. Now, the things we're going to give you not to do will change. But the things we're going to give you to do, you'll just add to. Then it's going to happen over there. I said, what's going to happen over there? We don't know, but it always happens. I said, I don't understand anything you're telling me. And he said, and that's it, and don't you forget it. I said, you didn't hear me. I said, I do not understand. And he said, that is it. And the day is going to come when you do what we tell you to do, that when you quit trying to understand, you're going to have understanding. And when you quit trying to understand, you'll enjoy not having understanding. So there's two things you're going to remember every day for the rest of your life. That's one of them. No matter what's going on in your life, you do not understand. Not even supposed to. And the other thing is, no matter what your situation is, it's never them, it's never the situation, and it's never God. It's you that must become different. You must become different than you have ever been before. I said, how do I do that? He said, oh, you can't. I said, what the hell you tell me for then? He said, that's what's going to happen to you. He said, now I'm going to tell you the one thing that got you here. The only thing wrong with that is it did for you what you needed for it to do. But it'll also be the one thing that, if it does not change, will keep you from getting everything that God has for His children. As long as you know that you know, you'll never know. But when you begin to do what we tell you not to do and to do, then you'll begin to know that you don't know. Then you'll begin to know. I said, hell, you're crazy. And he said, I know. And now I want you to get up in the morning and I want you to get down on your knees the first thing. And say these words and these words only. God, take me today and let me be what you want me to be. Let thy will only be done in my life. Help me to not take a drink of anything alcoholic or a mind-changing drug. Amen. You do not need to tell God what he has not done, what he needs to do, or how he ought to do it. God's highly capable of handling all the rest of it on his own. And then call me before you go to the bathroom. Why before I go to the bathroom? You may not need to go. I said, do you mean to tell me that you don't think I've got sense enough to know when I need to go to the bathroom? He said, we'll find out. They don't give you a lot of credit here, you know. Well, before I got out on my knees, I said, God, you and I know he don't know. Hell, he's a Presbyterian. And I've been praying to you all my life, and it never worked, and you and I know it never worked, and you and I know it's not going to work now, but we're going to do it just exactly like that little deacon says to do it. And when it doesn't work, we can... I got down on my knees, and I did that thing, and I wait before I picked up that phone to make sure I need to go to the bathroom. And he didn't even ask me. He just said, go to the bathroom, meet me at the club. I met him at the club, and he said, now go to work. I said, I hate my work. He said, what's that got to do with it? I said, well, I couldn't even go. He said, what'd you do? I said, well, I sat around the house. He said, sit in that chair? I said, yeah, till noon. Then I went to the club. He said, well, you just don't know how to go to work. I said, how? He said, go get in the car. I said, oh. You can start to catch this if you write it down. And he said, oh, by the way, there's one other little thing that I want you to do besides your prayer that morning, and I want you to do this every day. When you leave the house to get in the car, I want you to invite God into the day. I said, how do you do that? He said, you say, God, I invite you into the day. Write that down, and you can get it in just a couple of weeks if you just work at it. You know. And then I met him back at the club, and you know how they are, they're big shots. They say, get your coffee and sit down. Hell, you know to do it, but they've got to tell you out loud. They've got a little child here that they're working with, and they're all big shots, you know. And then they tell you, right, you almost get comfortable. They say, go home and eat and come back to the meeting. I know to go home and eat and come back to the meeting. They've got to tell you. Then after the meeting, he said, now go home and thank God for the day. I said, I did not thank God for the day. It's been a miserable damn day. I hate my work, and I hate this job, and I hate you, and I hate this whole damn bunch, and I hate everything about it. And I hate God on the side. And I'm not going to be a hypocrite. He said, do you feel like you're not sincere? I said, that's right. And I'm not going to do anything with God or anybody else when I don't mean it. He says, you don't need to be sincere, or you don't need to mean it. It's only the action that you're taking that's going to make you different. Never your thinking. And the action you're taking, you're not even going to know you're taking it. And if you did know you were taking it, you couldn't take it for what you want to happen, because what's going to happen is not what you thought you wanted to happen. Well, I understood that, so I didn't get into that. He said, remember this one thing. Your relationship with God has absolutely nothing to do with you. We just have you not doing some things and doing some things at each situation that you get into, and God takes care of the relationship all by himself. I said, do you mean to tell me that God does not care whether I mean what I say or not? He said, not at all. You don't care either? Not a bit. Well, I just went home. Closed the door so what's-her-name couldn't get in there. Got down on my knees. I said, okay, by God, God. Thank you for a miserable damn day. Amen. Went to bed. Hell, if he don't care and God don't care, hell, I don't care. Did that for about 2 months. And I was dry. I got to where I didn't have to do it so mad. And I was driving one morning about 9:15 on that old 610 loop in Houston right above Memorial Drive. And for the first time in my life, knowingly, God moved into that car with me as my friend. And I knew him to be my friend. And I never knew him to be my friend before. And for the first time in my life, I knew something like God let you know. I knew I would never have to drink again or take a mind-changing drug unless I myself insisted upon it. I knew I would never have to fight that ever, ever again. Finest day I remember having in my life, and stayed with me all day long. And my God, that afternoon, I thought, man, I'm going to get me a tent and some tambourines, and we're going to go save some souls. God, I thought the rest of my day is going to be just like that. And I couldn't wait for him to get back to the club. He's 15 minutes late. He walks through that door. I said, get your coffee and sit down. The Baptist is taking over. He did it, but he did not like it. They don't like it when you talk back to them. And he sat down, and I told him what had happened, and he grinned a little and said, thank God we've got that over with. Now we can get started. I said, my God, that took a year. He said, some are sicker than others. I said, what are you going to do about old what's-her-name? He said, I'm not doing nothing. He said, I'm leaving my marriage just where it is, and I'm not messing with it, but I know a guy that's got his all worked out. I'll send you over to him. Sent me over to him, and he's Episcopalian. No, Baptist takes him a long time to get anywhere in his outfit. And he said, what do you want to do? I said, well, I'm going to tell you something. They've had me on hold ever since I've got here. I explained to them that I was not sleeping with old what's-her-name. had no plans of ever sleeping with her. Prayed for other people too, and they don't. And they will not let me go with anybody else. And I want to either know whether I can become capable of having a relationship with one woman. And if I can't, I'm going to go do my thing. He said, you remember that lonesome walk you made when you first got to AA, that you didn't fit in AA, you didn't fit back out there? I said, yeah. If you're willing to make that walk in every area of your life, I'll not only guarantee you a relationship with a woman, I'll guarantee you a relationship with your fellow man that you could never have imagined. And I'll give you a bonus on top of that. If you're willing to be willing to do that in all situations that come up in your life, I'll guarantee you a relationship with a God that you could never have dreamed of. I said, I don't believe that. He said, you don't need to. I said, you mean tell me I don't have to believe? And he said, not at all. All you got to do is do what I tell you not to do and to do. I get so sick and tired of that, I don't want to do. And not doing is the hardest thing I do. He said, you know, most people that get here that are still married are married right, but they still got to have change. Some people shouldn't be married at all. So we don't use marriage counselors here or employment agents. We just use the master counselor only. He's our only teacher, and he's the only one that changes us, and he's the only one that puts things together and takes them apart. And we go to him only, and we've got the system for that to happen to you. I said, what am I supposed to do? Well, first of all, we've got to find out what not to do. Because you don't know how to live with a woman. You haven't done well up that through yet, have you? I said, no. Failed every time. You're not going to tell her what's wrong with her ever again. I said, who's going to tell her? He said, I don't know, but you're not. And you're never, for the rest of your days, going to do anything to use children, friends, or anybody else to get her to do something so y'all will be better. I said, never. He said, never. You're going to have to learn to do that whether you live with her or somebody else. And whatever happens will not be any different. You'll either have it with her or somebody else. And you're going to pray for her. I said, I'm not. He said, yes, you are. You're going to say these words. You may have to say them in the beginning many, many times a day. God, thy will be done for her as well as for me. Take our relationship and let it become what you want it to be. I said, I don't want it to be. He said, remember, what you want has nothing to do with it. I started doing that and had a bad case. And they will not let me tell her what I'm doing. So I just had to run out of the house before it said anything. And finally, I got to where I could go to the bathroom and pass down past murder and not say anything. And then finally, I told him, I said, she needs to go to Al-Anon. He said, we take care of that. You don't tell her anything she needs to do ever, ever, ever again. They took her to Al-Anon, and I want you to know before God, myself, and other human beings, I'm in love with Al-Anon. I love you till this day. She found you depressing. Virginia, I love you. I love you, baby. I love you. Whatever program you got, keep it going. Then we took her to an open meeting, and I was very fortunate. A gal by the name of Carney Mary was in Houston, and she ran a halfway house for women. She had about six women with her, or seven. They'd been sober anywhere from 5 hours to 30 minutes. She had picked two of them up from the jail as she came by to the meeting. She ran and threw her arms around me, and she was dressed absolutely perfectly, plaid shirt, blue jeans, plaid socks, and tennis shoes. And oh, what's her name saw that, and I'm telling you that put the icing on the cake. We never have to worry about her coming here ever again. But through that not doing and that process you gave me, what was wrong with me, I'd written my four-step, and things, garbage came out in my four-step, but what was really wrong didn't. even though this was underneath what was really wrong. Surfaced. And I hurt and couldn't get rid of it. I told my sponsor over and over again that didn't work. So I told the group, and one of the people in the group said, you're not supposed to tell the group that. So I slipped over and told another group. And one of them snitched on me. We don't gossip here, you know. We're just concerned. So my sponsor called me and he said, well, I guess we're going to have to do something different with you on this thing that's wrong with you. He said, we're so sick and tired of hearing about that thing that you've got, this love, lust thing, and we've been hearing about it for months, and we're sick and tired of hearing about, oh, what's her name? She's out of town. You go home, lock that apartment, and you stay in there till God removes that from you. And I went home about 10:15. I stayed there all day and all night. About 11, 12 o'clock, went to sleep, and I'd pray and cry and cuss and did everything. Next morning, it wasn't there. I was afraid to go outside, see a woman, afraid to come back. And that night, I went to a meeting. I didn't tell them. Hell, they're so smart. Didn't even tell them. I waited after the fourth meeting, the fourth night. I said, well, I guess I might as well tell you. And he said, oh, you don't need to. We knew it the first night. I said, why didn't you tell me? He said, well, you need to know you're always going to be the last to know. I said, why is that? He said, we don't know. Maybe you got to be last to be first. We don't know, but you're going to always be last to know. We're going to know always when anything happens to you before you know it happens. Didn't take too long after that. Then I'm just sitting there in a house, and I know when my sickness is gone, you know what we had? Nothing. You know what you have when you have nothing? Nothing. So we got a divorce, used the same lawyer. She just had to explain to him what kind of guy I was. It took about an hour. I think she was thorough. For those of you who are concerned about her, by the way, about 2 months after we divorced, her best friend, I saw her, grocery store, and she said, have you seen old what's her name? I said, no. Happier than I have ever seen her. God, I wanted to call her and tell her what she was. I said, hell, she's forgotten. I had a half talk with a sponsor. He said, of course you can't call. I really wanted to call her. Kill me. Happy without me. Well, I was called on hospitals. They still got me on hold. Divorced and on hold. Now, that's a pretty sad situation. I've got the wrong people in AA. And they told me that I could never associate with over a period of time anybody that I didn't establish that I want God to be ahead of every area of my life. Well, I was calling on this girl in the hospital, and I thought one day, I said, you know, maybe that's the type of girl I've always wanted. But I didn't do anything. We stayed in the hospital cafeteria, which is not very romantic, and had coffee, and we talked about God and work and nothing else. I thought other things, but we didn't talk about it. They did let me think about it because they knew I couldn't keep running. Well, I took this girl and four others to a convention, hospital convention, and these other girls accused me of going with her, and sure enough, we had some funny, funny feelings together, and it was kind of different funny feelings that I'd had. So after we got back, I went by to see her and said, we better go up in your office. I said, you know, I may be falling in love with you, but there's nothing we can do about it because I cannot have an affair. My sponsor won't let me. Then I realized she looked funny, you know, from a 45-year-old man. And I said, well, I guess I might as well tell you the rest of it. I'm an alcoholic. I go to Alcoholics Anonymous every single night, twice on Saturday and Sunday. They let me do two things, work and go to AA, and that's all I get to do. And think. She said, what's it all about? Well, I don't know. I started to explain, well, we smoke a lot and complain because our eyes burn, and we drink coffee, 10 or 15 cups every night, and complain because we can't sleep, and we pray and cry and cuss a lot, and that's about all we do. We meet when we don't want to and go when they say the time you really want to go is when you don't want to, and then if you really want to go, go ahead. And if you don't know, go ahead anyway. And if you think you want to do something, don't do it. It'll work out just fine. If you do it, it'll screw it up. I said, hell, I don't know. I'll have to call. So I said, I called my sponsor, and he said, what have you been doing? I said, I ain't done nothing. He said, bring her over here. I said, you'll have to go see my sponsor. She looked funny, but she went. And he had a little bookstore, and we went out of the bookstore and got in the one's meal. They did the same thing they do today. Said, oh, there, sonny, we'll handle this. And he talked to her for an hour and a half. I thought, hell, I believe he's going with her. He turned around to me and said, well, looks like God might be going to do something for you. God, I'm ready to go now. Oh, man, you know, I've been on caution for 2 years. You know, brain damage has really been bad this time. I'm ready to go. Sign old Gene's name to the motel and go right on in there. And he said, no. You know, we made agreement. We wasn't going for a little good. We're going to go for the very best. We're going to have God, AA, and Al-Anon in our home, or we're not going to have it. She doesn't know anything about AA. She doesn't know anything about this program. We're not going to have a house and a home with God ahead of it if this program's not in both people. She's got to go find out. And if she doesn't like this deal, there's no deal. God! Brain damage set in again. Well, I couldn't keep from telling her how to go to Al-Anon. I said, go in there and don't tell them a damn thing. Tell them your name's Eloise. You're planning on going to alcoholic. Don't tell them another thing. Don't tell them one single thing else. And she needed to tell them more than that. And they spent 2 meetings telling her why she should not go with an alcoholic. And I took her across town after about 2 weeks. She'd been going to Al-Anon. And they kept telling her not to go with an alcoholic. She didn't tell them who it was. Because I wouldn't let her. Because I know what to do, you know. And I took her across town and she heard the woman alcoholic talk. And she heard the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. She came back to that group. Said, you got a program here and I want to know what it's all about. Well, she hit her bottom and crashed and cried and died. We converted that girl from a religious life to a spiritual life. Those good Southern Baptists converted are really fine if you can get them converted. And we have that relationship today that only God gives one man and one woman. We do have God, A.A. and Al-Anon living in our home, and it's totally free. She had 3 children. And I'm just now being able to become a person who's becoming a husband, and all of a sudden it appears I may have to be a father and prospects of a grandfather. Because the children have children, some of them. The older one is a Southern Baptist minister. He got word that his mother was probably on drugs and had married an alcoholic. He did not show up for 3 years. He was up here in Kentucky, Louisville. And he had a wife and a daughter. When he showed up, it was kind of walking on eggshells around there, folks. And that little girl, though, didn't know that. And after the 3rd day, she started calling me Papa Jim and broke that ice. Now, we're not the closest. He still doesn't understand us, even though he knows you understand us, and I know he doesn't. He is finally taking the AA, the drunk, to AA. Can't understand why they don't all stay. But what happened in his life, they went to Venezuela to do a little 3-year missionary work, and when they came back, he saw his dad 1 time and stayed with us 2 months. And he's now back in church in Indiana. And he does take him to AA. He still thinks he could deal with the Al-Anon, though. He just wants to so bad. He's got her saved. You know, God, if you got him saved, you ought to be able to do it, but you can't, of course. We know that. He's got to find it out. The middle boy is probably going to be one of us. Loves his mother, and he came over to see that we was okay. He has the only grandson. He has 2 children. And they're probably gotten a divorce by today. And he's living in an apartment with a mattress. Eloise says, you don't think you're drinking too much? And he said, no. Of course, he's not then, you know. But I guess we'll get him. But see, you've given us the program that we can let him go and do whatever he's got to do. And we took him to a few meetings with us a long time ago just because they wanted to go. The daughter was a tall, slender, beautiful, blue-eyed blonde. Had a personality about like that bush. It was black. going, her boyfriend married somebody else, and she was going, trying to go to college and back, come back for us, live with us a little bit, and not with us a little bit, and going with an old, dirty bearded, dirty haired, pot smoking, dirty boy. And he was going to liberate her. And finally, Eloise and Avalon handled that very well. I could have saved them a lot of shortcuts there, but they wouldn't let me, of course. They don't let me do it anymore. I could save us a lot of time if we could get shortcuts in our marriage today, but they don't let me do it. Well, after she got her into an apartment and told her to go fly it, and do it, she had to live the way she had to live, and she had to see her once a month. They'd come back, she'd see us once a month, not say one single word, walk in, have lunch, leave. We didn't know it till later on. She used to come and look at us through the window, but we didn't know that. That old boy cleaned up. They both went to work and put him through college. He now has two daughters. When they had that first one, Eloise went down there and she called me and told me to come down there, and I went down there. She handed that little thing to me and said, I want you to make sure that you see us at least once every 2 months so she'll know who her grandfather really is. She goes back and sees her father about once a year, maybe. She skipped last year. She's an absolute delight to be around. Her husband, Dad, probably died when he was about 10 with alcoholism. Probably. And he told me 5 years ago at Thanksgiving that I really was the only dad he ever had. And I don't feel like I'm anything to any of them. And that little 3.5-year-old that I talked to last night said, Papa, I sure do love you, and you have a good time. You know, I'm glad I know some things about you and about me. And I'm glad I know that you and I are going to get to know. I'm glad I know that you and I, no matter what our situation is, nor what's happened to us up through this time, drunk and sober, we're right on time. And everything had to happen just like it happened. There was nothing in my life or yours could possibly have been any different. It had to be just like it was up through today. And I'm glad I know something else about you and I. And I don't know about people outside of this room, but I know about every person in this room. Without a shadow of a doubt, we're God's chosen children. God chose us to be His. And I know that today. And I know that my life was never going to change nor be any different until God sent me to be with you. And I know that. And I know God sent us to be with each other. We didn't get here on our own. Nobody, before they got here, said, I've got to hurry and get drunk tonight so I can hurry and get to AA. And I also know tonight my path's going to be different from yours. But I have the way to go down that path because you gave it to me. And you have that way to go down your path. And where you and I are going has none of our business. Because there's one good thing about it. You didn't know you was coming to AA or Al-Anon. It's none of your business where God's going to take you from here. And the quicker we get into one day at a time and get that attitude, the better you and I are going to be. The thing I didn't know that I needed to know was that if God really does love me, nothing can hurt me. And that's what I didn't know. I kept thinking he didn't, because he wouldn't answer what I thought he ought to answer. But see, now that I'm with you, as long as I stay with you, God's going to be able to do all the things for me and for you that he has for his children. And as long as I stay with you, I'm going to have a relationship with my fellow man. And without that, there's no relationship with God. There's no way to go off and have a relationship with God without a relationship with my fellow man. And I've got that even though you tricked me into it. And as long as I stay with you, there's no limit to where I'm going to be or where you're going to be. But we're going to have it. We already have it. We just don't know it. We're just going to have to live through what we've got, and we've already got it. But until we live through it, we don't know we got it. And the power that God gives His children, and the only one that receives it is the one that can get into a place to have a ministry that God can change them and give it to them. And we're in that slot without a shadow of a doubt. And I know it. Thank God I stayed with you long enough that I felt God loving me that day. And I could even feel me loving Him back. But thank God it's like it is right now. Every time we call one another, every time we meet together, that power is always with you and I, no matter where we are. Just like it is right now. And I can feel you loving me and me loving you. Thank you very much.
I guarantee you Big Jim is here. Thank you, Jim. I'd like to also personally thank the Speaker Selection Committee for picking Big Jim for the night that I was honored to chair this program. Those of you who want to play golf probably understand. Try to see me sometime between now and 10 o'clock Saturday morning, and we'll have all arrangements made for a little golf tournament. Thank you again, Jim. Let's close this meeting by standing, joining hands, and praying together the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.